No, hold on a second. This isn't just another Illegal Curve hockey show.
ESPN
Dave's
Radio
program deserves just a little something extra. A little something. We don't want to cross the line, you know? I'm thinking something like this.
From the naked dawn of man, 10 billion years in the making.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show NHL Season Preview. Now, here are your hosts, the Rich Man, the Legal Beagle, Ricky Ricardo, Richard, Richard Pollock, the Ez Man, Ezzy, the Ezzerific One, Ezra Ginsburg, and the Druzer, the Druminator, the Druzalizer, Druzy, just Drew it. No, I'm not done. The Drew Machine, Drew and Improved, Drew Man Chew. No, I'm done. Drew Mindell.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at www.sportsradio1290.com, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show NHL Season Preview. I am your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsburg. Michael Remus is making his way down here from getting some audio for us at the MTS Center. It's going to be a jam-packed 3 hours. We're with you right up until 3 o'clock this afternoon. Joining us this afternoon from Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot Friedman is going to be joining us, and a good friend from this show. We know him from Behind the Net Hockey. He is Gabe Desjardins. He's our resident statistical expert. He's going to be joining us on this program as well. Best way to get in touch with us, Twitter. Twitter.com/IllegalCurve. Send us your at tweets. If it's worthy, we'll read it on air. You can always send us emails, info@IllegalCurve.com. And, of course, you can follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. Richie, Ezzy, good morning. Good afternoon. How are you, gentlemen?
Doing good. Good morning, Drew. We've been together for the last 24 hours at the Jets game last night, and then we were at practice this morning. But this is always the best show of the year. I have the most fun. I think we all do previewing the season. It's going to be lots of fun, and, I mean, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you know, Drew, it's always great to be able to watch, take in some practice and then come right to the studio. You already have, you know, the morning hockey's already in you, and we're ready to go.
Might as well start off with the news that came out of Jets camp just about 15 minutes ago. The Jets have placed Tim Stapleton on waivers. He played last night in the game against Nashville. So why don't we start this segment, talk about last night's game. We were all there. Might as well start with talking about Tim Stapleton. Did you notice him on the ice really last night?
You know, Drew, he wasn't really noticeable yesterday, and he was playing the wing. He can play center and the wing. He is a guy that I think fell in favor with the Rick Dudley group. He has generally been an AHLer for most of his career, and he got a one-way deal. I think right now he doesn't necessarily fit into the plans. I don't see him being claimed, to be honest, unless maybe Dudley from Toronto has center. They have some depth at center, so I don't really see him being claimed. And then, so I very well could see him. Sometimes people don't understand. Sometimes a player can be put on waivers and still stay with the team. So he very well could be put on waivers and still stay as a 13th forward because he's on a one-way contract. They prefer to not pay him NHL money to play in the minors.
Right. Or he can go down and play in St. John's for the Ice Caps, the AHL affiliate of the Winnipeg Jets.
But he doesn't have the two-way deal that allows the team to pay him an AHL salary.
That's right. They'd have to pay him his NHL salary in St. John's, which is different than the guys who are on a two-way salary who make different money depending on where they play.
And Stapleton played yesterday on the line with Scheifele and Cormier. I thought Cormier was the best of the bunch, to be honest. I know that Scheifele scored the goal. I thought Cormier was the most active of the bunch. I thought he's really played well. I think he should make the team. Stapleton, you know, he works hard, back checks and such, but doesn't really stand out, and I think that they feel like his skills are replaceable, which is the trouble you have as being a borderline AHL, NHL player. But I still see it as possible that they put him on waivers, keep him around, and as an extra forward.
Yeah, and you know, there could be several reasons why he was placed on waivers. Maybe they've already decided, which it's very likely they've decided that they're going to send him down to the AHL. But uh-huh. he was a fourth line guy on the Thrashers last year that spent some time on the third line. A guy like Troy Bodhi, who isn't going to, you know, be looked upon for much offense, a guy like him has emerged, who might be a guy that they stick on the fourth line, you know, and rotate him with maybe a guy like Chris Thorburn. So they have some options there, but it is kind of a numbers game. They're now, you know, in the process of getting their roster down to 23 players. And, you know, I think that the way Troy Bodhi has played, he was a long shot. Mm-hmm. It looked like Jani Pessinen, I'm not saying that he's going to make the team, but he's also someone who has stuck around. And, you know, out of those two guys, I would probably say Bodhi would be the guy that makes the team because, you know, let's be honest, he's shown, even though he's said repeatedly, you know, he doesn't want to just be the guy known for being a fighter. But, you know, if you watch the preseason games, he's been a guy who's stuck up for his teammates.
Yeah, I mean, where does he fit in, though? I understand your point. He's been brought in to do what he does. The way he skates kind of reminds me of Sandy McCarthy. Remember that? Like a big guy, just not the most natural skater. One thing back to Stapleton for a second. He makes only $525,000 this year. So that's not going to be deterring the team from making any decisions, really. That's about as low as you can get financially for a National Hockey League guaranteed contract at his age. So I don't necessarily see that being the deciding factor, but it could be a factor to save a couple $100,000.
Last night's game, what jumped out to me last night is that obviously the Jets played four forward lines. I thought only about five forwards stood out to me last night. The top line, I thought it was the top line. Mm-hmm. Ladd, Little, Wheeler, I thought they played a good game. Mm-hmm. Then that second line really impressed me. The second line of Burmistrov and Thorburn. I thought those were the five players. Pessinen was on the line, but I didn't notice him that much.
Yep.
Pessinen was the sixth guy on that line.
Pessinen, if he's going to make the team, and I don't know if by his performance lately, if he'll make the team, he's got to be able to get the puck out of his own zone on the boards. He gets the puck on the boards in his own zone all the time, and he can't get that puck out. And if you're going to be a guy who's a fringe player to make the team and get a contract, you have to be defensively responsible.
Right. And for everyone who doesn't know, he is on a professional tryout contract.
Yes.
So he's not one of the guys that the Jets have under contract. But Pessinen, for him to make the team as well, he's going to have to shine in those intangible areas like penalty killing and. And I don't know enough about him to know. I know that he's basically had a cup of coffee in the NHL with Pittsburgh.
Yep.
And I think he was drafted by, maybe he was drafted by Pittsburgh, but I think he's only played one season in the NHL, and it wasn't very much. But the decisions that the Jets have to make are difficult because Cormier, to me, is a lock. And he was.
Well, that's one thing, Ezzy. Let me get in there because, Drew, you mentioned those five players. I think Cormier is in that bunch.
Yep.
Absolutely in that bunch. He was active. He does the right thing. He works hard. He's got more skills than I think people give him credit for. More of a passer than a shooter. But I think he's a very useful player, and he adds a nice mix to the team.
Yeah.
Different than what a lot of the other players bring.
I was just talking about last night's game.
I'm talking about last night's game,
okay.
Too, by the way.
You thought Cormier jumped out at you last
absolutely.
Night?
Absolutely. I thought he was very good.
Okay. I mean, that's fair. A guy who scored a goal yesterday but who didn't overwhelmingly jump out at me was Mark Scheifele. I thought he was relatively invisible for the majority of the game. Granted, he got on the score sheet, so you can't criticize him, you know. That's what you want him to do. You want him to score. But for the most part, besides that goal, I didn't think he was front and center.
Drew, since the first rookie game, let alone the first preseason game, Mark Scheifele has been under a microscope, which is to be expected, you know, first ever Jets 2.0 draft pick. But the thing that's just, you can't ignore with Scheifele is the patience, the poise that he shows for a guy that's 18 years old. It's difficult to see the Jets keeping him, you know, with the team for the entire year based on what their plans are for his development. But, I mean, even though yesterday he didn't have his best game, you know, 8 points in four games in the preseason is impressive. And yesterday was probably his weakest game, I agree. He did get a nice goal there. But that's another factor. The way things are shaping up now on the Jets at center, Scheifele's going to have to be second line, very least third line. And we haven't even talked about Jason Gregoire, and that's another guy. If you're going to have Scheifele and Gregoire on this roster, you're not going to have them on a third line because then you've got the guys that we've just talked about, the Patrice Cormiers and the Tanner Glasses.
Well,
that's going to be your third line guys.
Let's look at last night's lineup and make some, you know, make some adjustments. And you have Ladd, Little, and Wheeler as your top line. That seems to be, I thought they might split them up because I saw a little bit of different combinations in practice. That's going to be the line, it looks like, for all intents and purposes. The second line yesterday was Burmistrov, Thorburn, and Pessinen.
Yep.
Thorburn's going to make the team. Burmistrov is going to make the team. Pessinen, is going to be on the fringe. I'm not necessarily sure he will make the team. Let's just say Kane takes that spot, right?
And Andropov wasn't in the lineup last night.
We're
expecting him to be a second liner.
Well, I don't know. He may be in the third line, because he may want to do a three-line rotation. But so if you say that's Ladd, Little, Wheeler up front, and then you have Kane, Burmistrov, and Thorburn.
Yeah.
Interesting that you have Thorburn there, but...
You know, he can do a lot of the... You know, he's a guy who does the small things. He goes into the corners, and he can dig, and he can battle.
And if you're going to do a kind of a three-line scoring rotation, as Claude Noel's alluded to, not really the third-line checking group,
right?
Then that would make sense to kind of mix it up that way.
That's right.
You have those two lines.
Okay, he can also protect the other Kane and Burmistrov a little bit.
True also.
Yeah.
True also. And your third line is what yesterday was Cormier, Scheifele, and Stapleton. Now, those are the four lines they had. Cormier, Scheifele, and Stapleton. Well, Andropov... Put him in for Stapleton.
Right.
Okay? So you have Andropov there. And you have Cormier on the left side. I like Cormier in the third line left winger. I do. Yeah. I'm not sure if other people do. I like him as a third line left winger, and I like Glass as a fourth line left winger.
Yeah.
The center spot is what you're looking for. And the question is it going to be Andropov on the right wing, Cormier on the left wing, and then, say, Scheifele in the middle? Or will it be a guy like Wellwood in the middle, and then the fourth line will be Glass, Slater, and, say, Bodie?
Well, that's a good.
That's
the question there, and that's because you have too many guys. You have one too many guys, really, based on what.
Where's Gregor? I think Gregor goes back to the minors.
Do you?
Yeah.
He hasn't really stood out.
He's a very mature player for his age. In that,
he's 23, isn't he?
But Drew, when you have to adjust to the NHL pace,
right?
He doesn't make stupid plays. So
22.
He gets the puck, goes into the corner. He's responsible. Coaches like that. Could he slide into a fourth-line left-wing role? Sure, but he hasn't outplayed Cormier, and their left wing is the strongest part of the team right now. Ladd, Kane, you know, Cormier, Glass. Is he better than any of those guys?
Probably not right now.
And will he get enough ice time to develop? I don't think so.
I agree with Richie. Jason Gregoire, Winnipeg guy, came in of UND. He You know who Gregoire reminds me of? And I realize this might be a little bit high of an expectation. He kind of reminds me of Chris Kunitz. The way he plays. Smaller guy, very good hands, but you're right. I think that he doesn't make bad decisions, but Richie, he hasn't played pro yet. So
right.
It's difficult.
Absolutely.
For even though he's more offensively talented than Cormier and Glass, I really like Glass's game. Glass is not a guy that they're expecting. He chips in offensively when
he
can.
Sure.
And he does have some offensive talent. But Glass is a guy that will stand up for his teammates, and he's a guy that's good on the penalty kill and all that. And, you know, on the topic of a guy like Kyle Wellwood, me and Richie were talking about this up in the press box yesterday. Wellwood's one of the only guys that they can depend on to be a good faceoff guy. I mean...
Scheifele was 1-for-11 on faceoffs yesterday.
It's a huge problem. And we've been at several of the practices, and Scheifele works on that. He's a centerman, and he works on that. But that's going to be a problem when you need defensive faceoffs, Richie. You got to put the guy that you need out there. And right now, that would probably be Wellwood and Andropov.
If you put him with Andropov, Andropov's not great on draws either. So you put him with Andropov, then you're not great on draws. If you put him and Wellwood together, okay. But Wellwood Wellwood can play wing, play center. But say you put Wellwood with him, you know, what's their offensive potential? Where does Andropov fit in? There's a lot of
And then you've got Fair coming back in a couple months.
Fair also is exactly right, Ezzy. Good point. So
this is an enviable position to be in.
Well, I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily say that, Drew, because
why?
I don't think anybody's pushing crazy for, aside from Scheifele, nobody's really pushing crazy for a job here. And it's not like the guys they're juggling. It's not like they have the comparison riches like a Chicago.
No, okay, but the way they have it set up, and we've talked about this before. The guys who work the hardest are going to get in, are getting slot in on those bottom two lines.
Right.
It's going to be the guys who work the hardest.
And you have to fit in terms of wings.
Obviously, you have to. I mean, they're obviously not going to put somebody out of position, but I mean, for the most part, if you work hard, you're probably going to get rewarded over a guy if he's dogging it.
And two guys that have been extremely hard to play against that aren't necessarily the most offensively skilled guys, in my opinion, have been Troy Bodie and Patrice Cormier.
Yeah.
And those are guys that are going to fill in winger roles on the third and fourth lines.
Before we go to break here, it's worth noting for those of you concerned about Dustin Byfuglien's health, he was on the ice at practice today, so it seems like whatever was ailing him was a temporary thing, and he should be fine to go.
He was laughing around with Evander Kane. He's good.
Yeah, they all look like they're good.
Yeah, it didn't look like there's any issues there.
No, let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, we're going to keep talking about the Jets before we head deep into the season preview. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, quarter after 12 in the afternoon. Ezra Ginsberg, Richard Pollock, I'm Drew Mindell. Michael Remus is on his way down here. before, as he's on his way down here, before he did that, he was at Jets practice, as we all were, and he hung around to get some audio. He got an interview with Chris Thorburn. Here is the audio of that interview. Michael Remus with Chris Thorburn.
Mike Remus here with Illegal Curve. I'm talking to Chris Thorburn, third star of the game last night. You know, Chris, when you found out you were a third star, did it surprise you at all?
Yeah, I thought my dad might have been picking him, but no, I just... my focus last night was to kind of get used to the crowd, the atmosphere, because I hadn't played at home yet. And I thought myself and my line mates, Pass and Bermie, I thought we did a good job at holding on to pucks and playing in the offensive zone. And to get third star, I mean, that's an honor. And it's just hopefully a sign of good things to come.
Now, this said this was your first game at home. You know, did the crowd or did playing at home live up to your expectations?
Yeah, man, it's crazy. I mean, I saw it from the press box against Carolina, and just getting goosebumps up there. And then when you're on the ice, I mean, I've never been in an atmosphere like that, and it's kind of cool, and it's awesome to play in front of.
All right, so, you know, your style on ice last night, you were kind of very hard on the forecheck. Is that something, you know, we can expect to see from you every night?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's my game, up and down, big forward. I want to try and be a solid power forward that is strong defensively, bang guys, but also contribute offensively and help the team win. There's been a lot of speculation about goal scoring. I kind of want to be one of those guys that steps up and chips in once in a while to help the team have some success.
Now, we noticed that you were switching from right to right wing and left wing yesterday. Was there some kind of rotation that was planned yesterday, or what was going on there?
No, they're just, I mean, coaches always try new things and seeing where guys fit well, and I mean, you just got to kind of be ready for the opportunity whenever it presents itself, and that was just one of those cases.
And then you notice you've been a proficient shot blocker. Is that something that you can practice, or how does that work?
Yeah, I've kind of learned technique over the last couple of years, especially last year. I was on the penalty kill a lot, so if you want to stay on the penalty kill, you kind of got to sacrifice your body, and I kind of take pride in that, and I enjoy doing it. I had a coach last year that kind of taught me how to go down, and I mean, being shot lanes, and it takes a lot of courage, but at the same time, it's rewarding. If I'm not scoring goals, I want to be able to be strong defensively, killing penalties and blocking shots if that's the case.
Is there anyone who you won't get in front of, anyone's shot?
There's some scary guys, man. I took one from Boychuk last year from Boston, and he could hum a puck. And, I mean, that Weber from last night, it's just, I mean, you just hope. I mean, I'll get in front of anyone, but you just hope it hits you in a good spot and not any meat.
That was Michael Remus with Chris Thorburn earlier today at Jets practice. And, Richie, I did not know that you were Chris Thorburn's father.
Guys. Yes. Richie picked the three stars at the MTS Center last night.
It was,
Drew help too?
It was a group effort, I think.
It was just Richie, but that was amazing. Scott Brown, director of corporate communications for True North, comes up to Richie and he's like, "You guys are picking the three stars." And
I thought Thorburn played a very good game. I thought he was active on the forecheck. I thought he made a couple of nice passes out front.
Yeah.
He helped drive that line, drive the play in the right direction.
Yeah.
Good below the hash marks there, and I thought he deserved one of the stars.
I agree with you there. That was actually, I think it was, I definitely agreed with you on that one. I thought he played a very nice game last night. I liked him with Burmistrov there. I liked that a lot. I mean, Pessinen, I really thought he was fairly invisible last night. But I like the thought of Kane and Burmistrov and Thorburn. He can do the dirty work for him, and I think he'll be thrilled to play with a couple of skilled players. Like, man, I mean, Burmistrov is just... He could make a guy miss in a phone booth. I know it's cliche, but he's really nasty.
Burmistrov is very good. I think one thing people need to curb in terms of him is...
Curb the enthusiasm?
Well, I like his game a lot, and I really like a lot of things. He shows a lot of maturity for a player his age. He does have a tendency to make a lot of moves,
yep.
Which is I don't mind at all. The problem is he was just on the perimeter the whole time. So
right.
I think the way it looks has less of an effect on the game than some may think. It looks great. It's aesthetically pleasing. But it didn't really have, you know, if he's dangling on the outside, if you watch the defenseman's like Ryan Suter, just keep him on the outside.
Yeah, well, Suter and Weber. It's hard to get on the inside of Suter and Weber.
One thing I like to see from Burmistrov, and you'll see it over time, is he's a young guy. He's just going to his second season in the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
He needs to develop a better shot and become more dangerous off the rush that way, because I think that he certainly has the vision to be a dangerous, dangerous player. If he can add a threat element of a shot, he could really be difficult to stop.
Yeah, and back just quickly on the topic of Chris Thorburn. I really like his game. I didn't see him a lot when he played for Atlanta. And I think what's nice about Thorburn, and, you know, Remus touched on this a little bit, I think Thorburn has the ability to play with Burmistrov and Kane, where, you know, Troy Bodie, he lacks a little bit of speed and I think Thorburn's is a little more versatile in that way. Last year, you know, the fourth line for the Thrashers was Stapleton, Slater, Thorburn. That was the fourth line.
Slater, Thorburn, and Bolton.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bolton is now on the Devils. Mm-hmm. Slater, Thorburn, and Bolton.
Doesn't that mean he's automatically your favorite player now?
Yeah. I can't be a homer anymore. But Thorburn's going to be on this team. And I've been telling Richie this for a few weeks. I haven't gotten a chance to interview him or talk to him yet. Remus has. But he's a guy that's, you know, you can tell makes his teammates laugh. And he's going to, you know, keep things light. And along with a couple guys, Bufflin's a guy like that, too, that keeps the room light. But Thorburn, I think, is going to become a fan favorite. And I've said that before. And, you know,
a three-year deal, too, has he?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So he's not going anywhere anytime soon. They got to keep him around. Let's talk about this team in terms of a long-term vision for this entire season.
Well, I guess today is our season preview.
Right.
So are we just giving the Jets the rest of the segment?
Yeah, let's give the Jets the rest of the segment. I mean, it's not that we haven't been talking about them already, but
well,
sure.
You know, last week, Richie, we were talking to Dennis Bayak, voice of the Jets on TSN, and he basically told us when we were kind of talking to him about our preview show, he said, They want to pick up 16 points. They had 80 points last year. They feel they need 96 points to make the playoffs. Yeah. And if you think the Jets are going to make the playoffs, that's the improvement they're going to have to make. They were an 80-point team last year. And, I think they can do that. It's a little bit optimistic or very optimistic. Yeah. But that's the way this team is thinking. They have to pick up 16 points in the Eastern Conference to pass, the Carolina Hurricanes, for example. And get that last spot. Exactly. The Hurricanes are in their division. There's going to be lots of teams competing for that spot. The Leafs among them.
Absolutely.
So it's going to be tough. And a lot of things are going to have to come together. Burmistrov, Kane, guys that are 20 years old, 19, 20 years old, they're going to have to, step up their game and produce offensively. Because in the Eastern Conference, if you're going to be, bottom 10 in the league in goals or bottom five, which they were last year, right, that's not going to be good enough. Everything is going to all the planets are going to have to be aligned. Pavlik's going to have to play 60 games and give them 30 wins.
As you're mentioning a lot of ifs, I just don't see it happening. I mean, this is the problem. What happens is we're in Winnipeg. You're watching the Jets. You're watching the Jets very, very intently, and you see, okay, there's a lot of potential there in Little, Ladd, Wheeler, and there's a lot of potential there in Kane and all those and Burmistrov, and I agree. But if you look at it at a macro level, okay, the forwards are good, but then who are they going up against in the division? Ovechkin, Semin, Backstrom, guys like that in Tampa, Stamkos, St. Louis, LeCavalier, Malone, okay? Carolina, Skinner, Stahl. I mean, you're talking about a lot of dominant players, a lot of dominant centers. Backstrom and Stahl and Stamkos and all these guys. When you look at it in that perspective, they have to be better than, they're going to get into the eighth spot. They have to be better than the eight, then seven teams, right?
Yeah.
And do you see that happening?
Well, we went through that. I mean, that's what we've done. We've gone through it. And, I mean, I think...
Do you see them better as seven teams? We've done that before.
I don't.
I'm going to put it simply in this respect, okay? Seven teams. So the Penguins know, the Flyers know, the Rangers know.
Capitals.
The Devils know, as far as I'm concerned. And then you're looking at the Islanders. Yes, but the Islanders could be okay. They got Strait coming back. We'll talk about them later. They got Strait coming back.
Yeah.
They have a couple guys, I think, that are a little bit underrated, okay? If they can get some healthy goaltending, and they have Nabokov there, okay?
Yeah.
So you have that factor. So that's one team. We've talked about this before on the show. In the Northeast Division, you have, they're not better than Buffalo.
No.
They're not better than Boston.
No.
You could argue they're better than Montreal. I would say they're not. But you could argue that, and I would be able to listen to it.
It would be a step back for Montreal for the Jets to be better. Montreal would be taking a step back.
Okay, but we'll throw Montreal into the mix just for numbers' sake, okay?
Okay, yeah,
then
sure.
Toronto and Ottawa.
Okay.
Toronto will probably be better than them, but Ottawa may be worse. We'll see, okay?
Yeah.
So that's three. So that's four teams, okay? So you need three more.
Right. You got to go. Now you're in your own division. Are they better than Florida?
Better than Florida? It could be. It could not be.
Right.
Are they better than Carolina? I don't think so.
I don't think so either, but let's say they're even competitive against Carolina.
Right. You need one more team.
And they're not better than Tampa, and they're not better than Washington. So
When you're playing each one of these teams six times... If you don't beat these teams, then you're...
You got to really dominate in your division. And I don't see them... I mean, if they come out against Tampa and Washington with even records, if they go 3-3 against Tampa and Washington, against each of those, I think they're doing... That's a big step forward.
Sure is.
I mean, you have to get 8 wins, 16 points, that they didn't get last year. Now, will the crowd propel him to a couple wins? I think the crowd might, they might win, you know, three or four games that they wouldn't necessarily win because of the home crowd that they didn't have last year.
And Drew, we should point
Another three or four games. You got to win somewhere else.
The three exhibition games we've been to, it's been sellouts, 15,000 and three. Every game's going to be a sellout.
Four,
the
crowd, that's okay. 15,004.
Oh, 15. I thought you meant four preseason games.
No, 15,004.
There's every game is going to be a sellout for 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
10 years, hopefully. The crowd doesn't propel a win. A crowd crowd boosts up momentum. A crowd can't give you a win, but they're going to be loud every game, and they're going to have players pumped up, and that's huge. But that's very, very small and tangible. It's all about, to me, it's all about Pavlik taking his game up, giving them good goaltending.
The defense
improving a lot, and I think they can on last year's 27th in the league goals against.
They're special teams too, as
special teams, Richie. Power play was all right last year. It hasn't been good in the preseason, and there's a lot of issues there because when you don't have a guy like Fair there, so a lot of things have to happen. But you know, I'm going to be optimistic, Drew. I think a playoff berth is possible.
Okay, let's leave it there. When we come back on the other side from Hockey Night in Canada, Elliot Friedman is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. In the afternoon. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to Sports Radio 1290, the home of the Winnipeg Jets in Winnipeg. I'm Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, and we're thrilled to be joined on the line now by Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you doing this Saturday afternoon?
I'm doing well. You guys?
We're a little full of brisket after the high holidays, but we're doing okay other than that.
I can understand that. I can empathize, yes.
But we're recovering and getting back into hockey mode after synagogue mode.
Yes, one's a lot more pleasurable than the other, that's for sure.
I would agree with you there. We wanted to sort of start off in the Eastern Conference, and then we'll move our way west. Let's start with the question really that's on everybody's mind in the hockey world. When do you think Sidney Crosby is going to return to game action?
Well, you know, there was a point in the summer that I was really concerned that it would be a long time. I think that, if anything, in the last 6 weeks, maybe since about the middle of August, he's really started to improve. And on a day where Matthew Lombardi is returning to the NHL, he's going to play for the Maple Leafs tonight against Detroit, I don't think that Crosby will be too far behind. I was at a point really in the summer where I thought that Crosby was going to miss the year. I don't believe that anymore, and I think it's difficult to put a date on it, one, because it's a concussion, and you can't look at it like any other injury, whether it's a knee or a shoulder, and number two, because the Penguins are one of the NHL's most tight organizations when it comes to injuries. It's very difficult to get a read on an injured Penguins player, but I would have to say now that I wouldn't be surprised if he's back maybe a month into the season, even earlier.
Be great for the game. Elliot, the Penguins, you know, arch rival Capitals, made a lot of changes this offseason, whether it be adding Joel Ward and Troy Brouwer and Roman Hamrlik, and obviously the back end, Tomas Vokoun. Seems like they think they have all the pieces in place. Is this the year that Bruce Boudreau needs to at least win the East to keep his job?
Well, I think, you know, I don't like making those pronouncements. I think what you have to look at is where does the team... do they have to have playoff success? Absolutely. Now, if they lose the Eastern Conference Final in a really tough seven-game series, then I think you could say, all right, we don't need to see a change. But if they go out meekly in the second round like they did last year, I think you could see a change. I really think the Vokoun thing is a big deal. And you look at all the moves they made, you know, Vokoun was the one that kind of fell on their lap. He called a couple of teams. He called Detroit. He called Washington. He said, I want to come here for a little less money. And, you know, Detroit wouldn't promise him the starting job, and Washington would, which was the difference. There's always been a thing about Vokoun that he's never been put in a situation with a team that's good enough to show how good he really is. He gets that chance. And if he's a difference maker, they believe he is, then he will do a lot of things for them. I think the other thing, too, with the forwards is now they've finally got a situation where they can push Alex Semin. And the problem with Semin a lot was they didn't have enough depth on the side of the ice with him, the right side, to say, all right, you know, if you don't play well, you're not going to play. And now when you look at it, they've got Knubel, they've got Brouwer, they've got Ward. They feel that he'll have to look at it and say, all right, if I don't play hard, I really might not play. And I think those two things could have a huge impact on the Washington roster. I still do think in the East, though, that Pittsburgh is the team to beat this year.
Elliot, the Buffalo Sabres made, you know, arguably the biggest splash, you know, acquiring Robin Regier at the draft, signing Christian Ehrhoff to the big deal, signing Ville Leino. Are they going to live up to these expectations that have basically been set upon them by, you know, the fans and the hockey world?
Well, I think that they will take a step forward. There's no question about that. They were, you know, they were a tough out last year in the playoffs. They went to seven games with Philly. You know, I look at them and I see a team that is not yet in the elite in the Eastern Conference. I think they have a chance to be in a couple of years going forward. They've had three AHL rookies of the year in a row. They've really done some pretty smart things. But I think at the end of the day, it's your own players who make a difference as much as the free agents do. And, you know, the question is, does Jason Pominville develop into what he was expected to develop into? Can Derek Roy develop into what he was expected to develop into? You know your goaltender is going to be great. You know that your defense is going to be pretty deep. You look at that blue line with Ehrhoff, with Regier, with Tyler Myers. They've got a pretty good blue line. You know, but the question is to me is, can they score enough to win? And I really do believe when you look up and down their roster, I mean, Leno's going to be important, but it's the guy they've drafted and developed that are going to have to make the difference. And to this point, those guys haven't been the difference makers that you need to be.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're joined by Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada. Elliot, this is probably going to be the only year I'm going to be able to ask this question.
Okay.
Until Quebec City gets a team back, of course. But of the four Eastern Conference Canadian teams, who jumps out at you as being the best of the bunch?
The best of the bunch is probably Montreal. I think it's going to be a long year in Ottawa. Maybe there's finally a future in Ottawa. I think they will see flashes from some of their young players, which make them believe that there is something to believe in. And the one thing I don't forget about Ottawa is that Craig Anderson played the best goal of his career when he played for a team in Colorado that had no expectations, and he almost single-handedly carried them into the playoffs. And I think that's important. But I still think Ottawa is not going to duplicate that. And then I think, you know, you've got Winnipeg and Toronto kind of in the same situation. They weren't playoff teams last year. And I think there's probably a lot of teams in the East, probably about five or six of them, maybe not that many, probably about three or four of them, that you look at and you're not really sure what you've got yet. You've got teams that have some real nice pieces. In particular, Winnipeg has some really good young pieces, but you're not sure if they're ready yet in what's going to become a lot tougher of a conference. And then I look at Montreal, you know, of the four teams, they've got the best goaltender. I really think that Subban is going to develop into one of the better defensemen in the NHL this year. And I look at the one thing they don't have a ton of is forward depth. But I really think that Pacioretty is going to be an interesting guy. He was a guy who started to make a real impact last year before he got hurt. I went and saw him during the summer and trained. It's actually going to be Inside Hockey on the opening night, a piece on Pacioretty. And I think he can. I think he is determined, and actually he said it, that he doesn't want to be seen as a guy who suffered an injury. He wants to be remembered as a really good player. And he is determined to take that step, and I think he will. And I think those are a few reasons that Montreal will be the best of the Canadian teams in the East.
Elliot, moving to the Western Conference, Detroit's always at the top of everybody's mind in terms of whether they're going to finally take a step back. Losing Brian Rafalski, obviously replacing him, you know, essentially with Ian White, do you see is this being the year that they maybe take a step backwards?
I hate picking against Detroit, guys. I really do.
It's not a good way to make money.
It's definitely not a good way to make money. You know, I just think that they've got a really driven coach who knows how to push all the buttons. The guys don't always like Babcock, but I think they respect his preparation, and they also respect how he gets them to play. You know, it's a really professional room, Lidstrom, Datsyuk, all those guys there. They're not only great players, but they're incredibly prepared players in terms of, you know, how they approach the game and how they work out off the ice. And I just think when you have top-end skill like that, and that top-end skill and Zetterberg, too, are combined with guys who really approach the game the right way, it's tough to dip. You know, when the day comes that Lidstrom retires, it will be interesting to see how that this all changes. But I look at them, and I just look at the way they approach the game, and I just can't see them dropping off too much. The other thing, too, is, you know, you look at the teams that are expected to challenge them, at least in their division. Chicago's getting really beaten up this year in the preseason. I don't know. I still look at Detroit and I say, that's not a team I like to pick against.
Elliot, this is a question that's already been asked, and it's going to be asked over and over again, but I'm going to ask it in a different way.
What's that?
Will the Vancouver Canucks suffer a Stanley Cup hangover specifically at the beginning of the regular season? I'm not talking about will they return to the Stanley Cup finals, but will they experience a hangover during the regular season, specifically at the beginning of the regular season?
Well, I think the biggest question you have to have of Vancouver now is who's going to step up in Kessler's absence. I mean, you know that, obviously they're still going to be pretty good. I think the biggest question is, if they struggle at the beginning of the year, is it because of a hangover, or is it because nobody has stepped up to replace them? Mm-hmm. You know, they've had a really interesting way of looking at the preseason. They haven't played a lot of their guys. That's by design. But the thing is, I think they've probably been a little bit disappointed that nobody has stepped up and said, all right, I'm gonna take this preseason to show you that I am better than you thought, I'm more ready than you thought, and I'm going to demand a spot with this team. You know, like a perfect example in Winnipeg is you've got guys like Mark Scheifele and Paul Postma who said, okay, I'm going to make it difficult for you. If I'm not going to be here, it's not going to be because I wasn't ready or wasn't capable. And Vancouver really hasn't had that among a lot of their prospects. And to me, that's the biggest concern right now is not the hangover, guys. It's that there are players that they've given so much opportunity to in the preseason, nobody stepped up and said, I'm going to take advantage of it. And at the beginning of the year, with a guy like Kessler out, you're going to need that. Mm-hmm.
You know, we asked Jim Fox this question a couple weeks ago, Elliot, and he had a tough time answering it. He was going both ways. Who do you think is better, San Jose or L.A.?
I think San Jose is, because they've done it before. You know, at least with San Jose, you know, San Jose is frustrating because every year everybody picks them and they haven't done it yet. But at least they've gotten somewhere. And even without Kopitar last year, I understand he wasn't in the series, they beat them head-to-head. So I tend to look at head-to-head to say that. I just look, like, L.A. looks really good, and they look like they're getting better. But to this point, they haven't won a thing in the playoffs. And until they really win when it matters, it's difficult for me to elevate them past the San Jose team. I mean, you look at them in the last couple of years, yeah, they got wiped out by Chicago 2 years ago in the final, and they lost to Vancouver last year in the final. But they beat Detroit twice. Mm-hmm. That's not easy, including once in a really tough seventh game. They've got a bit more of a pedigree to them than the Kings have.
Elliot, you mentioned that you thought that Pittsburgh is the team to beat in the East. I'm going to assume that means you think they're going to be the Eastern Conference Stanley Cup representative?
Yeah, I do. I really believe in that team.
Do you want to tell us who you think is going to win the West and then who you have winning it all this year?
Okay. My Western team, boy, I'll tell you guys, I really want to pick San Jose. I do. I really like.
But you're going to pick L.A. instead.
Like Ron McLean. Ron McLean's off that bandwagon now.
Yeah, I know. Well, you know, if Ron's off the bandwagon, I guess I have to be too. You know, I just hate to pick San Jose because every year we get proven wrong.
Right.
And that's the one thing I want to do. I really look this year, and I'm going to have to say, if you're forcing me to pick somebody, and I take it that you are, what the heck, I'll just pick the Sharks. I really like what they've done, and I'm a big Logan Couture guy, and I think he's changed that team a lot for the better. you know what, I'll go with them this year, and I'll take Pittsburgh to win it all.
There you go. And if you change your mind, you can always repent next Saturday, so you're fine on that front.
Yeah, I probably will change my mind about six or seven times this season.
There you go. Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
My pleasure, guys. Happy to do it.
Take care, Elliot. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. When we come back on the other side, our good friend Gabe Desjardins is going to join us to talk about who's going to win each division based on what the statistics say. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home for Winnipeg Jets Hockey, Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on iTunes. Subscribe to it and get it sent to your iPod each and every week. Let's go now to the phone line.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
And let's welcome back to the show a good friend of this program. He's Gabe Desjardins. Gabe, good morning there in the West Coast. How is San Jose this morning? San Francisco, sorry.
San Francisco, yeah, don't insult me, my friend.
Come on. Sorry. Close enough.
Gabe, will you sign my last Saturday copy of the Globe and Mail, please?
Happy to do it. Just mail it over and 4 to 6 weeks delivery.
Yeah, and you have to throw in a couple 20s also to make it worth his while. We wouldn't want to see that. You'll put that up on eBay or something afterwards. No,
Gabe, you were in the Globe and Mail last week, an article that you were the featured star of, and congratulations. That was good for you, and we've had you on a bunch of times, and that was awesome. That was good for you.
This is the first time we have to pay him to come on. I think the fame has gone to his head. Gabe, we might have to, for a guy from Winnipeg, we might have to keep you in check or something.
What are you talking about? Last time I was on, you paid for my flight and all my meals. It was amazing.
Are you saying Richie is embezzling from the Illegal Curve account? Richie's got a Ponzi. Richard Madoff? Is that it?
It could have come. Who knows where it came from? All I know is that everything got covered for me.
Okay, very good. Gabe, we want to talk about, using you're a stats expert. That's really the best way I can describe you. You go deep into the analytical side of the game. You really study the stats and the numbers better than anybody else. We want to really go division by division and so have you tell us why you think a respective team is going to win each division. Might as well start with the Southeast Division, home to are they your Winnipeg Jets out there in San Francisco?
They're my Winnipeg.
Okay, just making sure you're still a Winnipeg. It's hard to.
Aren't they everybody's Winnipeg Jets?
I agree. They're my Winnipeg Jets. I just wanted to make sure about you. I don't know how quickly your allegiances can turn or something, but let's talk about the Southeast Division. Who's going to win the Southeast Division?
I think that's going to be Washington. I'm going to go out on a limb. Yeah, I mean that Washington was a team that was really good last year. Had a little bit of a run of bad luck. And picked up a great goalie in Thomas Vokoun, and picked up Joel Ward, and really hasn't lost a whole lot. So I'm looking for Washington, perhaps, to be the best team in the league this year.
Best team in the league?
Yeah.
Okay.
Gabe, the next division we want to go to in the East is the Northeast. A lot of people have Buffalo winning the division. What about yourself? Who do you have winning that division?
I think that's going to be tight with Buffalo and Boston. I mean, obviously, Boston's a good team, but Buffalo made some great defensive pickups and is a hugely improved team, if at too high a cost.
The Atlantic Division, Gabe, obviously, you have Pittsburgh with the questions about Crosby, and then Philly's made a lot of changes. The Rangers added Richards, and obviously the Devils can't be as bad as they were, at least the first half of last year. Who do you see as being the team in that division? Seems like one of the tighter divisions in all of hockey.
Yeah, that's honestly a tough call. I mean, New Jersey had a phenomenal second half of the season. Mm-hmm. They were definitely a playoff caliber team for the second half of the season. The Rangers are improved over last year, and we expect Pittsburgh and Philadelphia to regress a little bit over last year. So I think those guys are all going to be bunched in there, and it's too close to call, even at this point. Too close to call, probably with 10 games to go in the season as to who's going to win that one.
Gabe, when you're talking about, looking at the game through, strictly stats and numbers, how hard is it to sort of evaluate a team going forward when they've made all these additions? It's not the same team that ended the year that starts the next season. So how hard is it to sort of evaluate a team, based on the new additions they've made?
Well, teams are generally mostly the same, right? So they, and if you look statistically, teams, even if you pay no attention to what teams have acquired new players and any kind of player transactions at all, you'll see, a really strong persistence of winning percentage from year to year. In fact, it takes about 7 years to start fresh, to have no, to have your season no longer impact the future. So one of the safest things to do is to start with the teams that were legitimately good last year and just assume that they're going to be good going forward.
So there's no,
No magic?
Yeah, that's almost the word. I mean,
There is. I mean, you can go and you can look at individual players and make an estimate of how many wins they're worth and, add that into the new team's performance.
Because, I'm looking at a team. Sorry, go ahead.
No.
Okay. I'm looking at a team like Vancouver, who we're going to get, and when we get to our, Northwest Division preview, I think they're going to be a hot topic of discussion. I look at a team like Vancouver, and, on paper, granted, they're going to be without Kessler for a little while. On paper, they're pretty much the same team that they returned that was a Stanley Cup runner-up last season.
No Erhoff.
But for the most part, their key components are still there. Yet, for some reason, to me, they red flags everywhere on Vancouver saying that something about this team is going to, make them take a step back. Is that just intuition as opposed to anything the numbers could bear out?
I think that that's exactly what you should expect to happen, and it's exactly what's borne out by the numbers. The reason Vancouver...
Tell us why.
Well, the reason Vancouver played so well last year was because people hit, things went their way. Mm-hmm. Players hit the upper levels of their performance abilities. They won games. They basically hit sort of the peak level of their expectations, right? If we looked at New Jersey last year, I think most people had New Jersey pegged to the playoff team, and they ended up with 81 points. So there's a team where things went badly, and you're going to expect them to go better. So it's no different for Vancouver. A guy like Corey Perry, he's not going to lead the league in goals. It's just natural that when you do something that's that amazing, it's almost impossible to follow it up the next season.
Gabe, are people that are saying that L.A. is going to win the Pacific Division crazy? Who do you think is going to win the Pacific Division, and do you think that's the strongest division in the league?
I think that's a tight division. I think San Jose is still better than the Kings, but it's going to be close.
Yeah, typical Homer.
typical Homer, yes, exactly. Now, both of my California teams, right?
Yeah.
So I think that'll be tight. It's going to be very close. Kings will probably be a little bit better than they were last year. Sharks, roughly the same, maybe slightly worse, but with some payroll flexibility. But the other three teams in that division, I think, are going to be pretty awful. So I don't call that the strongest division.
What division do you? I think I know what you're going to say, but what's the strongest division in your opinion?
It's usually the Central.
Yeah.
I think that St. Louis. I mean, I wrote something a couple years ago about how Columbus in any other division would have been a reasonably good playoff team, mm-hmm. and in the Central they just get beat up playing against Detroit and Chicago and even Nashville. And St. Louis is a pretty good team that hasn't made the playoffs in a while. And again, that's just by far mostly because of the presence of Detroit and Chicago, just the toughest division in hockey.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. You think Anaheim's going to be awful this year? Is that just because you think Perry, exceeded all expectations and he's going to be due for a step back?
Well, Anaheim was brutal last year. Their underlying numbers were terrible. They may have put up 99 points and been in the playoffs, but they were not a good team. And we should expect them to get pulled down much more towards their true talent level, which is unfortunately out of the playoffs.
Even with a healthy Jonas Hiller?
They also have a terrible travel schedule this year.
The value of a goaltender is we'll see what happens with Ilya Bryzgalov in Philadelphia. But I think that even the value of the best goaltender in the league is not high enough to save you.
Gabe, we mentioned Vancouver, obviously, and due for a bit of a regression. Even so, considering their division and the lack of talent in their division, do you see anybody but Vancouver winning the Northwest?
Well, I mean, obviously, Calgary has a small chance of doing that, mm-hmm. but really it should be Vancouver. I think the real race in the Northwest is who's going to finish 30th in the league.
And that's between Edmonton and Minnesota?
And Colorado.
I forgot about Colorado. Even after their crucial Varlamov acquisition?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what's the most games he's ever played in the season? 17, something like that.
Yeah, it was a head scratcher when it happened, and it hasn't become any less of a head scratcher at this point.
Yeah, exactly.
Gabe, we were talking about this, a few seconds ago. The Central Division. Who's going to win the Central Division? And what are your thoughts on the Detroit Red Wings with Rafalski and Draper? Basically you know, retiring, and those guys have been a staple of the team. And what about the Columbus Blue Jackets, because they went out and got Jeff Carter? As far as the numbers go, are people, you know, being a little bit unrealistic as into thinking that Columbus is going to make the playoffs? I know that was about three or four questions there.
Yeah, no, okay. So let's start. I mean, the strongest team in that division last year might actually have been Chicago. I know that people obsessed over their winning percentage as opposed to their goal differential or their shot differential. But we saw in the first round of the playoffs that Chicago was every bit as good as mm-hmm. Vancouver, and, you know, took them to overtime of Game 7 on the road. So really, you know, we should look at Chicago and say that was a team that was as good as Vancouver or better than it. So that's my pick for first place in that division. Detroit, guys who retire tend to have not brought that much value to the table in their last season. You know, Scott Niedermeyer may be the rare exception, but, you know, you look at a guy like Rod Brind'Amour, who had a reputation as being a very solid player, but his numbers really declined, and his last season was pretty poor. So losing guys who basically, you know, said, look, my skills have declined so much, I got to hang them up, even though this team's got a chance to win the Cup again next year. I don't think that hurts Detroit all that much. I mean, it pulls them down a little bit versus last year, but I still think that they should be the number two pick in that division.
What about Columbus? As far as numbers go, they're pretty bad. But is signing Jeff Carter, or, you know, trading for Jeff Carter, pardon me, is that really enough to make the playoffs for them? Because they've only made the playoffs once, and they've never won a playoff game.
No, I mean, that's a bad team. They gave up some value in Voracek for mm-hmm. Carter.
Yep.
And also Sean Couturier, really, when you get down to it. So I think that move was actually a wash for them and probably cost them money in the long run. And I don't think they're going to be any better than
last
year.
And Gabe, they've got depth issues at every position, really, too, right?
Defense.
Yeah, and just, you know, sort of a poorly run organization. So that's a team that I have pegged for last place.
Gabe, are you saying that James Wisniewski wasn't worth that massive contract he got?
No. I don't think, generally, most free agents aren't worth the massive contracts that they get. It's a rare guy who's worth throwing all the money at him.
And once again, Gabe, I'll plug your article. Read the article, the Globe and Mail article, and people will know how you thought about what you thought of the Brizgalov contract, right?
Yes, exactly. Although not that was a secret.
No, yeah. Exactly not. Gabe, we'll put you on the spot before we let you go. Stanley Cup champion and both conference representatives.
I see a Washington-Chicago final. And I am going to make all those Washington fans really happy and go with the Caps.
There you go. You heard it from Gabe himself, the man who studies the numbers better than anybody else. Gabe, are you going to be able to head down and see a Jets game this year?
I'm looking forward to it. I was actually going to go to the home opener in Phoenix.
I was going to say that's probably the closest one to you.
Well, they're going to play in San Jose. But I thought the Phoenix trip would be good. But unfortunately, something stands in the way. I got plans with my girlfriend that night that are much more important. So
this is like the Jimmy Fallon movie.
Yeah.
Fever Pitch?
Yeah.
Never saw it, though.
Sure you haven't. Richie, you definitely had a romantic date with your girlfriend watching that movie. Gabe, thanks very much as always, bud. We'll get you on next month or so.
All right. Thank you. Good talking to you
guys. Thanks, Gabe. Bye, Gabe. Can't wait for the autograph.
It's Gabe Desjardins. You can find his work on behindthenet.ca.
Read that article, guys, hockey
and everything else. Read the article in the Globe and Mail. You can search for it last week. Exactly. Let's head to break. When we come back, we're going to start going division by division, team by team. It's the NHL season preview show here on the 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can find us on Twitter @IllegalCurve. Find us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve. The website is www.illegalcurve.com. And in case you missed any of this program, it will be available for download on iTunes. Search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Subscribe and get it sent to your MP3 playing device each and every week. A programming note before we go any further. We are off next Saturday for Yom Kippur, Jewish Day of Atonement, and really that'll take us about 24 hours to get through. But we are on next Sunday, October 9th, 9 a.m., live, hopefully, from the MTS Center. So we'll be starting off our game day coverage for the first NHL regular season game in 15 years in this fair city, so we're looking forward to that.
Well, the preseason games were so loud and so crazy. I can't even imagine what that first game against Lehigh Town is going to be like.
Very true. It's time. They're going to start going. We're going to go division by division. We're going to go team by team. Let's start.
Southeast Division.
I figure we might as well start with the division that the Winnipeg Jets play in. We sort of talked about the Jets earlier, so we're going to sort of, skip over them, and let's start with the Washington Capitals. Big free agent acquisition in the offseason. The biggest one, as far as I'm concerned, is Thomas Vokoun shoring up their goaltending position. They traded away Semyon Varlamov for a king's ransom. Not quite sure why it was paid, but whatever.
Should make that into a 30-30 documentary, Drew.
About the king's ransom? About the Semyon Varlamov trade? We'll get Peter Berg on the phone.
That's not documentary worthy, unfortunately.
It might be to see Greg Sherman losing his job, because that's inevitably what's going to happen there.
Richie picking the three stars last night, that's documentary worthy.
Let's talk about the Washington Capitals.
Is this their year? It's that simple. It's an easy question when you're talking about the Washington Capitals.
You can't always put it into 1 year, and Ellie Freeman made a good point about Boudreaux, and if they lose a crazy seventh game to a good team, maybe
is this their year to take that next step? And for them, the next step
they have to get. You never know though, Drew, how it works in terms of the cap world. They could run into a crazy good team in the second round, and it could be a battle. But you know what? If they have a battle like it was against the Penguins a couple years ago, and they lost 6-1 or whatever it was in that final game, Game 7, it'll probably be gone. They have all the pieces now. And as I wrote about it in that hockey perspective, I wrote about Washington, and I said at the end, George McPhee's put all the pieces together now. They add Hamrlik on the back end. So your back end is Green and Weidman and Hamrlik, Schultz, Olsner, and Carlson. You got depth that you didn't have before. You have Thomas Vokoun in the Nets. Some similar numbers to Varlamov last year, but overall in career numbers, terrific. Great move by them there, obviously, to get the first-round pick, too. And you look up front, and now they have Ovechkin. They have Ovechkin up there. Right now they're playing with Semin, but as Elliot said also, the right wing with Brouwer and Ward, now Knubel and Semin, very deep. They have Ovechkin on the left side. They're playing Johansson with him right now, Marcus Johansson. They have Leik, who they can put up center and on the wing. They have they have flexible parts. They added Halpern some face-off and some penalty killing to replace Boyd Gordon and David Steckel. They have all the parts there. They can score, they can kill penalties, they can shoot, they can take draws in their own end, they can move the puck from the back end, they have a good goaltender. I agree. This is all the pieces are in place. This should be a year where they're very, very, very difficult out. They're my division winner.
They're by far going to be the division winner. I think this is a 120-point team, but the question is, to me, Washington is quickly becoming the San Jose of the East. Last year, they got swept by the Tampa Bay Lightning in the second round after beating the Rangers in five games. This team is not being built to get to the second round to the third round. This is everything. And Richie asked Elliot Friedman, is this almost a make-or-break year as far as Bruce Boudreau's tenure? And it has to be. You go out and you get these guys, like you mentioned. You get a Joel Ward. You get Thomas Vokoun, who was the only really goaltender on the free agent market who I think is elite, is elite. And I think it's not even close. I think they're going to blow out the competition in this division. Tampa Bay, will get in the neighborhood of 9,900, 101 points or whatever. But, this is an amazing team. And to me, it's all about the playoffs. I don't think it's even close in the Eastern Conference regular season. I think they're going to beat Pittsburgh, and they're going to win the Eastern Conference quite easily. There's so much talent there. And, Elliot, when we had him on, said that, Semin is going to be pushed by Joel Ward and other players. And you look at a guy like Marcus Johansson, who I started liking. I think he only played 25 games. Here, I'll take a look here.
Played a few more than that, I think.
Oh, sorry, he played 69, actually. Yeah. But he's going to have a little bit more of a role. He only had 20 points or something like that. A guy like that is very talented, centered, 20 years old. To me, it's not even close, Richie. It's a question if they're going to be the class of the East when it comes around playoff time. That's why they got a guy like Joel Ward.
Tampa Bay Lightning surprised a lot of players with how well they played last year. Can they keep it up? They didn't really do much in terms of, they shuffled the cards a little bit, but their core, they lost Simone Gagné. He's the biggest name that they lost. But their core pretty much stays the same. Are they going to replicate last year's success?
I'm not so sure, Drew. I see them taking a step back a bit.
It doesn't mean necessarily a huge step back, but a little bit of a step back. They have a great coaching. They have obviously their core in place for a long, long time. I mean, St. Louis, Stamkos, and LeCavalier are all signed through at least 2014, 2015. So you have a nice core in place. Obviously, Ryan Malone, if he stays healthy. Teddy Purcell took a nice step forward last year. They have guys who know their roles. Steve Downing, Dominic Moore. All these guys know their roles. They do what they do, and they do it well. But, you know, on the back end, I still don't see an elite level. You know, Hedman needs to take the next step. He didn't really have that much in increased responsibilities last year. Matthias Olin's a year older. You know, again, probably loses a little bit. There's a little more wear on the tires, a little bit slower. Kubina's never been the fastest player. I like signing Brewer. He has a nice speed element, puck moving. And they bring in Garon to complement Rollison. But have they gotten better? I don't think they've gotten better on paper. And, you know, their goal differential wasn't very good last year. I think they were like +8. So, you know, will they be able to do the things they were doing and have the same results? I'm not so sure. I think another year of adjusting to Guy Boucher's system in terms of the 1-3-1, people will have a year to adjust to that and the changes he'll make. I see them being a competitive team. I see them being second in the division and a playoff team, but maybe not, you know, as at the level they were last year.
Does Dwayne Rollison's age concern you?
That does, absolutely. How can it not? How can it not?
Do you think he'll be able to do as well as he did last year?
Well, they'll cut down his games played, and love Garon split the games with him probably, and hopefully ride him in the playoffs. But last year he was very good, and he was one of the reasons why they made it to the conference finals within a goal of the Stanley Cup finals. I'm not so sure I would trust him in that role, and I don't trust Garon, but he is, you know, I always wondered why Vokoun wasn't an option there.
Richie, they're offensively, they're unbelievably talented. Like you said, a guy like Teddy Purcell finally has a good year in the NHL to complement Stamkos, LeCavalier, St. Louis, and, you know, Stamkos was invisible for a lot of the year, but there's too many question marks. You talk about, you know, a lot of the question marks on the Jets, the ifs, but defensively, I mean, you start in goal, and, you know, Dwayne Rollison, even though you talk to anybody and his fitness level is just chided, and but he's 41 years old and he's going to play less games.
That's right.
And on defense, I agree. I mean, you know, your only significant acquisition is Bruno Gervais. I mean,
and Gilroy. Yeah.
And Gilroy. Those are guys that they're talented to a certain extent. But the problem with that team was not necessarily getting offense from the defensemen. It's that
right. It's
a group that struggled defensively. So you're going to give up too many goals, and I think it's going to be close between Tampa Bay and Carolina for the second spot. I still give Tampa Bay a little bit of an edge, but it's Tampa Bay and Carolina are there's not that much separating them, and I think Carolina made acquisitions.
Well, let's talk about Carolina. Their big acquisitions were Thomas Cabrelle and Alexei Ponikarovsky. Yep. As you tweeted, you thought you were watching an old Leafs team when you saw the two of them play on Wednesday night here in Winnipeg. They lost Eric Cole. He's the really only big loss. Is Carolina, you know, they seem to always go 1 year on, 1 year off, 1 year on, 1 year off. If that's the pattern, this would be their 1 year on. Do they have enough to make the playoffs in the Eastern Conference?
I think they do, Drew. They have some struggles at the beginning of last season. I think that I like the Ponikarovsky signing. I think what Paul Maurice has said is he sees him playing with a similar player to Mats Sundin and Eric Staal. I think Cabrelle helps him move the puck. They have a lot of nice puck movers in the back end, and whether it be Jamie McBain or whether it be Thomas Cabrelle, obviously Joni Pekkanen, you know, fluid skaters. Maybe not the strongest defensively, but they're going to move that puck out of their own zone. They have a terrifically consistent goaltender in Cam Ward. They have nice complementary pieces up front. I mean, I saw that Drayson Bowman and Zach Boychuk got sent down today to the minors in the AHL. They were hoping those guys would take the next step, which they haven't, and that's got to be discouraging for Jim Rutherford, who recently got his own 4-year contract extension. But overall, I think this team has a lot of parts that work together, and they should be a difficult team to beat. And I think Maurice has the hand on the pulse of the team, and I see them being the third best team in this division.
Now, Richie, I watched, well, and you guys also watched, a lot of people watched Carolina play the Jets twice, once in Charlotte and once here. I really like this team, and even though I think that they're going to finish slightly behind Tampa in the division by, you know, 5 or 6 points or something like that, I think this is a team that could do what Tampa Bay did last year and go to the Eastern Conference Finals. I think that if you look at this team and Jeff Skinner up the middle, with Eric Staal, Jeff Skinner had obviously the best rookie season out of anyone. But you look at guys like Zach Boychuk, the two Zachs, Zach Dalp,
Yeah, they like Zach Dell more than really, they like Voracek right now.
They really like him, and, you know, losing Cole, you know, is tough, but they tried to replace the size with a different type of player in Ponikarovsky, right, and, you know, picking up Caberle. I really think that you know, like I just said, I think that they're the type of team in the playoffs will be tough to play against. They acquired a guy like Tim Brandt, who's just a penalty killer face-off guy, but it's the little pieces that they picked up that I really like, and I think Carolina's going to be tough to beat in the playoffs.
It's going to really depend a lot on their, you know, second-line scoring, whether it be Ruutu or Jussi Jokinen. If those guys can perform to those levels, another year of progression for Brandon Sutter.
Yep.
Those will all be factors, obviously, hoping for no kind of sophomore jinx, quote-unquote, from Jeff Skinner. But I think that they have a lot of guys, you know, they're going to rely. That's what I think is the key, Drew. I think you know you're going to get from Eric Staal's and that defense, really, and the goaltending. You know what you're going to get from those things, from those facets of the team. If you can have Ruutu's and Jokinen's consistently provide second-line offense, I think this is a tough team to beat, and I think this very well could be a playoff team.
We should point out, too, Drew and Richie, you could have two Sutters on the team, and I believe they drafted another Sutter this year.
Did they?
I think there's three
Brett
Sutters.
Sutter's not much of an AHL.
I think there's three Sutters in the system. I think they drafted another one. So, but it's a gritty team with a lot of skill.
Florida Panthers signed every free agent in the NHL. It's going to take a little while. It would take us actually the rest of the show to list all those guys. Yeah. Is it really come down to David Booth's health?
No, you know what? Panthers? I'll let Richie jump in here. They made some good acquisitions. Scotty Upshaw, Brian Campbell. It's going to come down to goaltending. It's simple. They don't have it.
You're right. It's simple. I mean, as he's right.
It's bad.
We can break down the team all we want. I mean, but as he's exactly right. For all the signings they have, and whether it be Bergenheim, Upshaw, Fleischmann, Kopecky, trade for Versteeg, all those guys, that's fine. But when you're relying on Jose Theodore and Scott Clements in between the pipes, that is certainly a drop down, if not three, from Thomas Vokoun. And for all the signings they made, you know, on defense as well, bringing in Campbell and Jovanovski, I think their defense defensively isn't great. Their goaltending isn't good. So that's a bad mix. I don't like this team at all. They're going to win some games because they got a lot of veterans in the lineup. But with that goaltending, I wonder how long it'll take before Jakob Markstrom's up. Then that might change things.
Richard, 1-5 in the Southeast. And we're going to record all these predictions so we can always go back and look at them, and we'll post them on illegalcurve.com. So we'll get your predictions as when we make this article before the start of the season.
Washington 1, Tampa 2. Carolina 3, Winnipeg 4, Florida 5.
Mine are exactly the same.
Drew?
Hang on.
You can't put it on the board?
You guys are supposed to...
You can do it during the break, Drew. What do you got?
Well, I
got
to remember them. And Ezzy, you duplicated that?
Yep.
You know, I'm going to go Washington 1. I'm going to go Carolina 2. I think that they're going to... I'm going to go Tampa 3, still as a playoff team. Winnipeg 4, and Florida is 5.
Slightly different, but close. But
close to the same. I think we all agree that Washington's going to...
Washington's a powerhouse. Washington could win the President's Trophy, and I would not be surprised at all.
No, of course not. We do have that much talent. Let's see if they can harness it all together. Let's go to break. When we come back, we're going to do the Northeast Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Season Preview live on Sports Radio 1290.